talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here we go. Welcome to the show. This is Darren of Plymouth speaking. I'm standing in for Jeremy Nell for the next 2 hours. And it's great to be back. And it is hot. I'm sat here. I'm dripping. I've got a Russell Brand style shirt on with all the buttons undone. And it's 30 degrees. So let's hope we have a very hot and exciting next 2 hours. And who have we got coming up? First up, in about 5 or 6 minutes, I'll be speaking to Francis. Francis is an artist. He came on to speak to me about a month ago on TNT. And obviously, there must have been some wrong speak going on or something that he was saying, but they chucked him off for the end. So me and Francis have got some unfinished conspiracy business to discuss, and that's coming up in 5 minutes. And then after that, we'll be speaking to my good friend and fellow podcaster and psychology researcher Rohan, and we're going to be looking at the issues surrounding the Tavistock Institute, which has just been shut down, the transgender agenda, and all things going on with Donald Trump over in America. So please stay tuned. Right, some news. I have a paperless office. It was always the dream. I'm surrounded by screens and microphones and keyboards, probably contributing to the massive heat that I'm feeling here in my flat all the way in sunny Plymouth. But it looks like the SNP didn't really buy into the paperless office, or at least didn't buy in to the limits on deforestation set in Scotland, in the COP26 conference for climate change, which happened 12 months ago and did more for waking up the general public than anything that I can think of. The herd paid attention when 400 jets flew into Glasgow, each jet producing the same sort of CO2 as the average family car does in a year. Anyway, the SNP in Scotland, in their infinite wisdom, have decided to cut down, or have cut down, 14 million trees just to make room for 21 wind turbines. Now, I thought trees reduced or took out CO2 out of the atmosphere. And actually, during a really hot day like this, those wind turbines are absolutely useless and producing no electricity. Here's the story. So the Scottish government has moved to assure that the trees that they have removed, that more trees will have been planted. But it's unknown what proportion of these are going to be mature plants that play a big role in turning carbon into oxygen. And it's the trees, that turning of carbon into oxygen, why we're all here. A Scottish conservation charity, which has planted almost 2 million trees across the Highlands, believes that both wind farms and trees are key to reducing carbon levels. The tree removal seems especially ironic, given that world leaders supposedly agreed to end deforestation in total by the year 2030. This was agreed at the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow. The Herald, the Scottish Herald, who is reporting this story, reports further that a spokesman for Forestry and Lands Scotland said renewable energy and forests are key to Scotland's contribution to mitigating climate change and the FLS is successfully managing both elements. The figure for trees felled by wind farm development on Scotland's forests and lands as managed by the FLS over the last 20 years is 13.9 million. Now, just to put that number into some sort of context, it would take half a year if you cut one tree down every second to cut down 14 million trees. So it's a lot of trees. Yet once wind turbine installations are placed on the site where the trees once were, those trees can never, ever be regrown in that particular area or play any part in the sustainable timber supply chain, which is what those trees were originally for. So they were part of a sustainable supply of timber. So that sustainable supply of timber has been removed to be replaced by 21 wind turbines that are probably only effective for 50% of the year, and that those that timber will now have to be procured or grown or taken from another area. And it just goes to show how contradictory the climate change narrative is when we are cutting down millions of trees to put up wind turbines, which have been shown to be not only not environmentally friendly, but also don't really meet the energy requirements that we require of them. They don't replace the fossil fuels. It would have been better just to burn the 14 million trees and turn them into electricity. So an interesting story, and it's something to think about. They are lying to you about climate changes, and they are going to use it to continue to oppress you, to push on you, to increase energy prices, and to restrict your movements. So whatever you do, resist this particular narrative. Okay, so if you've missed your favorite TNT radio shows or interviews, simply listen back whenever you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT Radio website. We're on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, TuneIn, and probably a whole load of others that I've never even heard of. Now there's no reason ever for you to miss out on anything on TNT Radio.
We're not exactly mind readers, but
they say what I'm thinking.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. And it's Darren of Plymouth standing in for the next 2 hours. And my guest today is Francis. Francis is an artist. He's very politically active. He's a fellow crazy conspiracy theorist, which makes him just the sort of person that I want to talk to. And we have unfinished conversation. So, Francis, how are you? And how are you enjoying this beautiful summer weather?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. Everything seems better when the sun is out.
Exactly, but they're telling us to be scared of it, aren't they, with the heat wave business? But I just think it's a normal, glorious summer.
Yeah, it is particularly hot. But if I think back to June and some of July, in Plymouth in particular, you know, which I can comment on, it was greyed out. In fact, in June and last year in June, I had to put the heating on. Yeah, which my landlord really, really wasn't happy about, but it was particularly cold. So, I'm like everybody else. I'm trying to enjoy the weather. I'm making trips, plans to the beach, plans to Dartmoor, and I recommend everyone else do the same.
So we have to make the most of it while it's here, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's good for you. Think of all the vitamin D.
It's important.
I feel so much better. In our last conversation, we sort of we were discussing the plan and the evidence for sort of a sinister agenda that's been put on the population that everybody is aware of, everybody who's listened to this show in particular are aware of. And if you're not, make sure you stay tuned and carry on listening. And we talked about 9/11 and the Iraq war and this building up of like sort of false storylines for the public to follow and how it was used to restrict our freedoms and take it away. So how do you think we are today in terms of that agenda? What's going on right now? We can sort of part, if we're not part COVID, because obviously COVID is still a massive part of it and so is monkeypox. Where do you think we are right now? And what has happened in the last month since we last spoke that fits into this?
Well, some people don't come as far as I think I do, and maybe you do, but the whole 9/11 was the precursor to a new century where they were going to reshape the world. And they have these projects and they're published and they're they talk about them openly and it's all in plain sight. But it's obviously couched in guarded language or disguised language so that you have to, in order to, if you're a small group of people and you want to persuade a larger group of people to do your bidding, you can't just go at them through weight of numbers and you can't go at them directly, but you can offer them things that on the face of it are for their benefit so that they become convinced to comply with your plans. And so they're going to tell us that everything they do is for our benefit. So they hijack our best impulses, whether it's to save granny or to be custodians of the planet and to look after our environment and not to pollute. But the end result is what you have to look for all the time. And the end result is always that your movement is restricted, your speech is restricted, your consumption of fuel is restricted. And these are the underlying goals. And that's what we're seeing in the current news, the news reel that you see coming through the summer, like be scared of the heat wave because this is climate change, which means that you've got to stay at home and drive an electric car, which we can then control the amount of maybe electricity you use down the line, or maybe it's always come down to those basic points in the end that your movement should be restricted, you should be restricted, and maybe you should have less children, these kind of things, or maybe you should eat less meat, maybe you should be eating insects, all this kind of thing. So whether it's the COVID agenda is now in the phase where the COVID agenda morphs into the climate agenda, but the end result is the same. You basically stay at home, you live within a 15-minute walking radius of your home, you have low traffic neighborhoods which prevent you traveling. So it all sounds very good to have a green area, and nobody wants polluted cities. Everybody wants trees and butterflies and rainbows and songbirds and all of that. But it means that you, the ordinary member of the public, stay at home within 15 minutes of your house. Your fuel is restricted. Your movement's restricted. And then at the top, you've got all these oligarchs and people of power and prominence, whether it's Barack Obama or whoever, buying oceanfront properties. Uh-huh. They're telling you that the sea levels are going to rise, and driving private jets around the place while the rest of us sit at home and eat bugs. That's the essence of what's happening now.
Yeah, and there's no more of a classic example. I mean, you mentioned Obama buying seafront property. All the wealthy elite, you know, Bill Gates, all of them, Bezos, they've all got top-notch property in the most desirable areas on the coast. And yet, according to the global, the climate change scientists, and they put out their models, those places should be underwater in 100 years. Although, to be fair, I was taught at school, probably the same as you, Francis, that Plymouth was just going to be a series of islands by the year 2015. And I've lived in Plymouth for 40 years plus. I know I don't sound that old. And I know for certain, and I'm trying to convince one of my students of this, that sea levels haven't risen an iota. The classic example recently of this is the Canadian dictator and authoritarian Justin Trudeau, who recently just flew into Costa Rica without a mask, even though he's still trying to get everybody in masks in his own country, and a country that's just lifted all mandates and effectively made them illegal. It's these people that we need to deal with. And, what do we do about the people that are in power that are pushing this? Because until they're removed, there isn't a way forward for the general public.
Well, it's very difficult because obviously you've got the younger generation coming through, and they're, as we were taught in school about acid rain, and we had the hole in the ozone layer, and they always have an answer to it. I've seen people answer this, like, so everyone's forgotten about the hole in the ozone layer. And the answer to this is that's because we stopped producing CFCs and so on. The doomsday predictions never quite come about. And there's always like a plausible reason why that might have occurred. It's not that they weren't accurate in the first instance. And but the parameters of the research were set a long time ago by the UN, by a guy called Murray Strong, and it eventually culminated in the Rio Summit in 1992. But the parameters were that they could only ever consider man-made factors. So when people cite what they call the science in regards to climate change, they're citing research that was done within limited parameters that was exclusively the man-made contribution to climate change. So they don't consider it. It's like considering a very small percentage of the holistic environment and the various causes and factors that could be producing these effects, whether it's the solar flares or the sun or natural evolution of the planet and so on. So it's just it's just like COVID. It's very hard to unpick because it's such a massive topic for people. Uh-huh. But what I think we always have to look at is what they impose upon us and what they actually do for themselves. And that always gives the lie away, that these people weren't social distancing, they weren't wearing masks, they were having parties and drinks parties or whatever, if the politicians in this country. So that gave the lie to the COVID thing, but also with the green agenda, with the climate change agenda, you can see the same thing, is that it's do as I say, but not as I do. And it's basically one rule for the little man and one rule for the powerful. And that gives the lie to it. If they were truly concerned, they would lead by example.
And I think the climate change is the best example, the best way to sort of understand the mindset of the elite. Because I think the climate change agenda, the environmental agenda, that the cult that they're in, underpins everything else. Because they have this vision of a utopia that they want for themselves, and the serfs are the people that are going to deliver it for them by having their rights restricted and their behaviors changed, so that, you know, and that we'll be the ones who are probably out with the shovel and the sieves cleaning everything up and put, you know, picking all the plastic out of the oceans. We're going to be the ones who are not going to be putting CO2 in the environment, and they're going to be living the dream. So, yeah, I think climate change is... the narrative that they will always continue to fall back on. When we come back in a minute, we're about to go to an ad break, Francis. I want to talk about something that we didn't get into discussing last time, which was the health model that's been implemented or pushed upon the public, not just in the last 2.5 years for COVID, but over a longer span of time. And I've got some interesting facts and things, in particular, because it's climate change, on sun cream, which I think is very interesting. Anyway, we're going to go to a quick ad break. So please, if you're listening, come right back. We're on TNT Radio.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Here's a question. Like, you could look at something like polar bears, and they're clearly, their numbers are up. There's more than they've ever counted. The U.S. Geological Survey says they're probably at or near historic population highs, more than they've ever counted.
The models predicted that the Arctic was going to be ice-free. Remember, there was not going to be any ice up at the Arctic Circle anymore. They all predicted that. Did it happen? No. Now ice is bigger than it ever was. And then they have another model, a polar bear model, if you like, downstream of this climate model, which uses the climate model. The polar bear model uses the climate model and then projects the number of polar bears that there's going to be. And you, of course, everybody remembers, they said they were going to diminish and probably die off because there was not going to be any Arctic sea ice. There was not going to be any polar bears. And both turned out to be whoppingly false.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back. It's Darren of Plymouth standing in for Jeremy now for the next hour and a half. And I'm here with Francis. And we're going to start talking about the health model. We'll just call it the health model. And I've actually got a quote here that I've seen from somebody that you're probably familiar with, Francis, Dr. Malhotra. And he actually tweeted this out, and he says, "The evidence is overwhelming that the overall net effect of the pharmaceutical industry on society in the last few decades has been a negative one." Have we been in the grips of a pharmaceutical company-led health agenda for a long period of time, and we've not really realized it, particularly in the UK, until the last couple of years?
Well, I would say yes, and then people would say yes, but you're not a doctor. But there are doctors who feel the same way. I think due to the COVID situation and the censorship and the controversy about the COVID vaccinations, people have started to explore first vaccinations themselves and then the big pharma model altogether. Now, as we remember during the COVID lockdowns, there was no emphasis whatsoever on personal responsibility for health. So people were, in fact, it was quite the opposite. For example, where people wanted to keep fit and exercise, gyms were closed. Where they wanted to, I suppose they did keep, obviously, the general food shops open, but they also kept to open fast food places and off licenses or liquor shops. But they didn't allow people to exercise. It seemed a very strange model if you want to keep people healthy or locking people inside. When, as we spoke about before, vitamin D is very important. They would even censor the importance of vitamin D for a long time until it eventually became sort of permitted to discuss the merits of vitamin D in preventing yourself getting ill. So almost everything they did would go against an intuitive and educated attitude to personal responsibility for health. Like everything they did took away the things that nourish us, like whether it's be love, companionship, sunlight, exercise, time outdoors, work is healthy, you know, like all these things. And it reinforced all the negative and the most basic things, like so people, instead of having healthy relationships, they were all on Pornhub, you know. Instead of having nutritious food, that you're able to go to the have fast food was open, the gyms were shut. It was all very contradictory. But there are more people waking up to this. And for example, there were controversial statements being made by some people like Dr. Tess Lowry and Mike Eden, who were very much in and of the system. And they're now coming out and questioning it in a really serious way that throws into question everything we've ever been taught about medicine and about the health model. And one last thing I should say is that even before COVID, the COVID situation, we had a situation where in America, one of the leading causes of death was recorded as being doctors by several different metrics on different occasions. And at one point they were third, and I think they've been second, but certainly there was the third, which is not a good reflection on the modern health industry. And if you look at it as well, a lot of problems have increased in the Western world, you know, particularly America, but also in the UK, whether it's obesity or whether it's mental health or dependence on antidepressants or just regular use of big pharma medication. It sort of demonstrates that our health is deteriorating whilst the wealth and power and prominence of big pharma is increasing. And that is something we should all definitely question, whether we are doctors or not.
Yeah, I mean, the whole vitamin D thing, I remember, I had a conversation with Clive Dacar. You ever heard of Clive Dacar? He's sort of alternative health guru type, and he conquered cancer through healthy lifestyle. And he sent me a load of stuff, a load of vitamin D. And I started taking vitamin D, and, you know, I've never been a vitamin taker. I've always, before COVID, believed the health narrative that our NHS was great, that we live longer now than we ever did in the past, and this is all part of progress. I started taking vitamin D every day, and man, did my mood improve. Did I feel so much better? And I don't want to be taking supplements, but just like with the sunlight, it made me feel so much better. And yet Matt Hancock stood up in British Parliament and said, there's no studies that show that vitamin D will help you with COVID. All the studies, I can't remember exactly what he said, all the studies that that have shown vitamin D helps are fraudulent, or we don't accept them. I mean, he stood up in Parliament to say that. And what I really started to notice during COVID, particularly during the lockdown, because I was wandering the streets, was all the adverts on billboards, bus stops, shop windows, adverts everywhere. It's always for pharmaceutical products. And my conclusion was, like, we're in some sort of medical cult where we all think that we're sick and that we're looking for somebody to save us. And that's an attitude or a way of thinking, a worldview that's encouraged in so many people. I do a lot of walking. I don't drive, and I walk around my city a lot, and I listen to what people say when I walk past. Bit of a nosy people watcher. That's what I am. And they're always talking about their health. They're always talking about somebody who's in hospital who's sick. And this is something I think that we need to break culturally, by I'm not sure. What do you think the answer is to that? That we're in this medical cult, and how do we break out of it?
See, but answers to all these questions, like you asked me about climate change before, and the answer to this is always turning our back on the existing system or educating peer-to-peer, because we don't have access unless we can hijack or break into the broadcasting networks in some way. We don't have access to the same media resources that they do, and so we can't amplify our message in the way that we do. So we have to use shows like this, and we have to talk to our friends, and we also have to be almost like a personal demonstration of good health. So, for example, even the simple situation of whether you're COVID vaccinated or not. So if a bulk of people who you know who've COVID vaccinated are, I'm just saying that may be the case, it may not in your experience, but have in some way fallen ill or had a declining health since then, and you
in
haven't,
every case.
Then maybe, right, I'm not, but the point is you can only demonstrate, you have to be like the personification of your argument. And then people say, oh, how do you look so well? Or how are you keeping so well? And so spread peer-to-peer. Our peer-to-peer is our strongest thing. And it's something we've lost. Something that's very curious to me is that we now trust, say, if I'm a family member, I can be an uncle, a brother, a son, or whatever, and I can speak to my family. They're less inclined to listen to me than they are to somebody on the screen who I know does not have their best interests at heart. Before 2020, we all knew Big Pharma doesn't have our best interests at heart. We know that they're some of the most fraudulent companies in operation. The biggest fines ever have been paid by Pfizer and other major pharmaceutical companies. And yet, for some reason, we're putting our health in their hands. And yet, if we look at it in a different way, if someone came to our town selling snake oil in person and not through the screen and not through the advertising that you've just mentioned, we would reject them out of hand, and we trust our family members, we trust our people around us who were demonstrating good health and demonstrating concern for us.
Okay, so when we come back, and yeah, you're right, people believe, people who've got a doctor title in their name, they shove them on TV, people believe them. There has been a massive change just overnight with the CDC and the instructions they're given regarding COVID, so we're going to touch on that, and I want to talk about sunscreen, seeing as it's so hot. So we'll just come right back after these news headlines on TNT Radio.
Darren Metzer here with a quick check of the day's headlines. It's been revealed that federal agents were reportedly looking for documents relating to nuclear weapons during Monday's unprecedented raid on Donald Trump. Latvia and Estonia have pulled out of a cooperation group between China and European countries, as the West criticizes Beijing over its escalating military pressure on Taiwan. And the blame game continues as Russia and Ukraine accuse each other of bombing Europe's largest nuclear power plant.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back. It's Darren of Plymouth, and we're chewing the fat with Francis. We've been talking about the medicalized culture that we live in the West that may have been sort of hidden from our eyes. We may have not been aware of it because we always assumed that it was for our benefit, to make us better, to make us healthier. And that is why it was constantly pushed upon us. And I think people are waking up, like you said, Francis, and are becoming aware that actually they haven't got our best interests at heart. I said there's a change in COVID narrative. So after 2.5 years of bloody misery, apparently the CDC have come out, and this is published by NPR, and Francis is nodding his head. Now COVID is just like the common cold. So this is the new CDC guidelines, in case you didn't know, and you're locked at home because you're worried, you know, you've had a positive test this morning, or you've got a bit of a runny nose, hay fever or something. New COVID-19 guidelines or guidance from the CDC focus on, guess what? Individual decisions and personal responsibility. So those exposed to the virus are no longer required to quarantine. Unvaccinated people now have the same guidance as vaccinated people. So if you're on your seventh shot, I'm pretty sure you're probably feeling rather unhappy right now. Students can stay in class after being exposed to the virus, after disrupting their education for the last 2.5 years and destroying students' learning and social skills. And it's also no longer recommended to screen or test those that do not have symptoms. So why has this suddenly been announced? It's actually quite surprising for me, I think, because the midterms are coming up in November, and I was sure they were going to absolutely ram home the COVID narrative again in the hope that it would protect the Democrats, who look like, if in a fair election, are going to get absolutely smashed. So why the change in this, in the guidelines from the CDC? And does it demonstrate that COVID has been purely a political operation?
Well, you know what I think, but like what they will say is that they'll probably argue that that's because the vaccination has been a success. But the fact that, you know, so many, I don't know what people would feel like if they've read those or heard those guidelines now and they were coerced into taking a vaccination that has harmed them. Or they've lost somebody who took it, because they're, I mean, even on the VAERS site, in where you report your injuries and deaths due to the vaccinations in America, there are hundreds of thousands of people who've been harmed, right? And it's difficult to report there. And a Harvard study said some years ago that only 1% of regular vaccinations side effects were reported to that system. So we can maybe make the assumption that there are many more than are actually reported, but there's hundreds of thousands of people who've been harmed by these vaccinations. And I just wonder how they're feeling that it's now, they've been told it's not necessary. They have the same rights and status. And so, as I say, people have been coerced into it to attend college, to do the jobs and so on. So it's very, I just think about those people when I'm hearing that. But the reasoning, there's two reasons then. Obviously the COVID agenda is maybe coming to an end, or maybe taking a pause, which in a way we've got to think, well, what's coming next? Has it served mm-hmm. its course now? Are we now into the next mm-hmm. stage of an agenda? And if we agree that the agenda is to restrict us and to curtail our movements and our freedom and the amount that we reproduce, I think, because they're trying to keep people apart, then what is coming next? We're coming into the winter. We've promised many people are predicting a big recession. I think even the governments accept that. It's been on the news headlines.
We're already in a recession.
Yeah. And then, and the extent of that recession, are we going to have food shortages? We're being told that it's been mooted that we're going to have fuel shortages and blackout days in January, I've heard, in this country. Yeah. So if we think about what we're always in the position of people who are surmising, we're not invited to meetings. We don't have any inside information. We have to deal with what they put out, what they give to us. And so we're in the position where we surmise. So all we can surmise is that probably COVID has served its purpose and we're moving on to the next thing, which might be the things I mentioned, like the food shortages and the fuel shortages and the climate agenda.
We mentioned 9/11, and I just wanted you to cast your mind back briefly. How long do you think the 9/11, after the attacks, the 9/11 narrative continued? Is it really? It really sort of, it was predominant in the news cycle up until the point that they invaded Iraq, correct? And we had the 9/11 commission, and they looked in the report and all the phony cover-up stuff that they did. But the actual sort of daily 9/11, which it lasted for about 2 years, correct?
It's a good question, because there's different ways of assessing that, the answer to that question. So you could say it was like intense for 2 years, but it sort of carried on, didn't it? Because we had the, until we actually invaded, I suppose it served its purpose when we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan in one sense, but then it also had to continue serving its purpose to make us believe in the terrorist bogeyman for 7/7 and for the Madrid bombings and for subsequent bombings all the way up until maybe 2020, when terrorism took a break for 2 years. And so I think for a lot of people that it still has a usage, doesn't it? Because the people, they still believe in it. And there was a sort of a suggestion of terrorism raising its head again in the past since I spoke to you last. So it's ongoing. People still believe it. And still people get very affronted when I mention that I don't think it's correct. And they think you're some kind of looney tune that you believe in the laws of physics and they didn't take a day off on 9/11, that buildings don't spontaneously collapse. And I still think most people don't know three buildings fell on the day. So it's still ongoing. And I think that if people lost their faith in one narrative, like 9/11 or like COVID or like climate change. Then they start to critically examine the other ones. And I think that is still why 9/11 can still be of importance, because it's kind of irrefutable that 47-story skyscrapers don't fall down in 6.5 seconds.
And it provided, like you said, a backdrop or some sort of like a context in which to implant other storylines. Like you said, you know, the financial collapse, the war in Iraq and in Afghanistan, or the invasion of those two countries wasn't really a war, was it? Because it was just one-sided. The constant threat of terrorism that we've been made to fear for the last 20 years. And yeah, you're right. It all stopped for COVID. And it might be that COVID is now sort of the underlying backdrop, the landscape in which they're going to stick different types of threats on to keep us scared. Maybe they're going to just purely focus on, before it was terrorism and Islam, you know, the Muslims are bad and we've got to invade these third world countries and take their resources. Maybe now it's going to have this medical backdrop. We've had COVID. They're pushing monkeypox like mad, and it's hilarious because it just isn't. No one's buying it, are they? I mean, I don't think anyone is really buying the monkeypox narrative unless you live in San Francisco, but there's a reason for that. So maybe they're going to put on more and more health scares, and there'll be something new coming in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, what you've just mentioned there, it's just sparked off a thought that, you know, if we hadn't had 9/11 and we hadn't become accustomed to meddling in other countries and invading other countries, would we have gone into Ukraine? So exactly what you're saying there, they've introduced a precedent where they can lock people down or impose these what they call NPIs, you know, on people where you've got these interventions to restrict people for threats to the herd, if you like, threats to the populace. Uh-huh. So then they can apply that then, because the precedent is set. They can apply it for monkeypox, or they can apply it for Marburg, or whatever, you know, whatever. It's become the new bogeyman, hasn't it? Or boogeyman, where it was terrorism, it was ISIS, it was Al-Qaeda. And now it's just, they just rebrand it. So it's COVID and, as you say, monkeypox or Marburg or whatever the next one will be.
Yeah, I mean, there's some Bill Gates. There's actually a story that I was hoping to have time to touch on. We'll do it for the next couple of minutes. It's Bill Gates. Yeah, everyone's favorite doctor, farmer, rich person.
He's not a doctor.
I know. He's the world's doctor, mate. He's the world's number one doctor, number one farmer, number one tech guy. He's multi-talented, mate. Yeah, I actually bought a computer about a month ago, funnily enough. And man, did they love, I went like PC World or Curry's. Man, do they love, I mean, they literally called him Billy Gates. And they thought he was going to save the world and stuff. But I'll tell you what Bill Gates did do, and he did this. Ooh, a couple of years ago, this article come up in News Punch, so it's not a reliable source, but it's still a good article because I think it's true. Yeah. Months after Bill Gates' tech startup released millions of genetically modified mosquitoes into the wild, mosquitoes across the US are testing positive for extremely rare and deadly viruses, some of which have never been reported in the USA. And one of those viruses is called the Jamestown Canyon virus. Can cause severe brain disease, encephalitis in the membranes, meningitis. And here's an even better one. Eastern equine encephalitis, another brain disorder, that has a 30% fatality rate in humans. What Bill Gates did is he modified what he calls flying syringes, and that these flying syringes, and this is real, Google it. It's on Wikipedia, so it's definitely true. These flying syringes can carry vaccines, and so they're actually biological vaccine transmitters, and he wanted to use them on cattle and herd for dangerous diseases, etc., that were affecting livestock. Yeah, because he's a big fan of livestock. That's why he's bought up all that farmland, yeah, because obviously he wants to put cows on them. Not. And he also has discussed, and this is in writing, that he wanted potentially to use mosquitoes as a way of vaccinating the other herd on the planet, us. So I wanted to get that story in quickly before we come up to a break. Any thoughts on flying syringes?
Well, I think we have to look very carefully at what Bill Gates is doing. He has an undue influence on the World Health Organization as the biggest donor. And they're also trying to look to make treaties with our existing governments so that they can almost bypass our normal democratic processes, so that he can almost be the king of the world. He can actually directly influence our policies and our way of life. And these are the kinds of madcap schemes he's getting into. And all of them, again, I think you have to look at the ultimate result, not just whether he says it's benign or not. What is the actual ultimate result? Well, the mosquitoes are carrying now, apparently, deadly, according to what you just said, deadly diseases. And also they were talking about spraying some kind of vaccination in Australia. Yeah. Did you hear that one? There's another one.
There's another vaccine. So it's very strange, isn't it? They've talked about where you can vaccinate one person and then that person can spread the vaccine to other people. You know, would you want a vaccine? Yeah, here's a vaccine, Darren. Okay, well, do I need it? Yeah, I need it. You're going to get this Eastern equine encephalitis disease with a 30% kill rate. Here's your vaccine. And then I start spreading it to all my family and my friends and they get ill. It's a very scary proposition. And vaccines, I'm assuming, probably like that, could mutate just like viruses. So we're quickly going to go to a quick ad break. And then we're going to be right back. I'm determined to talk about my sunscreen because I think it's quite interesting. I've got some statistics here. And then we'll see if we can end the show on something positive, if we can. It is sunny after all. So we'll be right back on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
In case anyone is still unclear about what is meant by the deep state or the DC swamp, consider this. Federal magistrate Bruce Reinhardt, who signed off on the FBI's warrant request so that it could send 36 jackbooted thugs marching through Mar-a-Lago Monday and rifling Melania's closet, had to recuse himself from the Trump versus Hillary Clinton civil suit back in June. Judges have to recuse themselves from cases where either there's a conflict of interest or an inherent bias against one of the parties. So he had to recuse himself in June, but in August he's competent to sign a search warrant for the president's private residence? That's grounds for impeachment and it's grounds for disbarment. Meanwhile, Eric Holder was out Monday telling lies about President Trump and justifying this search warrant. Make no mistake, Joe Biden is not running the country. This is Obama's third administration. Trump 47 needs to be much more ruthless than Trump 45 ever was. No more deep staters in high positions. Looking at you, Christopher Wray, Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell. No more, these are nice people, I'd hate to see them get hurt. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Gloves off, Mr. President. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
We are the boy band.
Your tween made you see.
We are the boy band.
It's painful concert number three.
We are the boy band. We're 5 and 19. We are the boy band. Always singing on key.
You love your kids enough to take them to see their favorite band. Love them enough to make sure they're buckled up in the back seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Today, Julian Assange is a political prisoner while the mainstream media stays silent. Why did Julian Assange land in a London jail? Julian's statement in October 2011 may provide a clue.
Why is it that banks have so much to hide? Why is it that banks, even more than military and intelligence organizations, have attacked WikiLeaks? Because banks are all about secrecy. Banks are all about asset hiding, hiding the ill-gotten gains of rich individuals from around the world, stashing them in the Cayman Islands, other offshore jurisdictions, and yes, in London, number one censor of the British press.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
TNT. It's Darren of Plymouth. I'm standing in for Jeremy Neal. And I've been talking about with Francis the medicalized nature of our culture and how we're almost in a medical cult of some sort.
And with the sun being so hot, and it has been very hot, it's great. I was thinking about skin cancer. And I was having a conversation with a friend about skin cancer. She was rubbing coconut oil, whatever it was, all over her body, etc., because it's hot. And I thought I'd have a look at a few statistics. You know, how prevalent was skin cancer in the past and how prevalent is it now, for example? And then when was sun cream first introduced to as a public consumer public product? So if we take data from 1918, the average male, the number of male presenting with melanomas and skin cancer in 1980 was about 5 to 6 per 100,000. That's now 5 times more as of 2018. There are about 25 men presenting with skin cancer. So that's by five. And the women numbers are similar. In fact, they've tripled since 1980. And if you go all the way back to sort of the 1930s, where there are some records, it was almost no cases. And I'm sure historically, I'm not saying skin cancer never existed, I don't think it was a major problem. So sunscreen was first introduced by a guy called Milton Blake, a chemist, fellow chemist, in Australia, of all places, in 1932. And it had a sun protection factor, an SPF factor of 2. And actually, it wasn't since the 80s that we had anything above SPF, sun protection factor, of 15. Now, every time I have a shower, I rub myself in all these chemicals to make myself smell nice. And I'm increasingly worried that this is bad for me. Do you think, and I'm asking you a lot of do you think questions, Francis, so I do apologize because you're not a doctor and you really should not be commenting on any of this. I joke. Do you think that a lot of the products, and I'm not just necessarily talking about sunscreen because I'm using that as an example, they know that they have these cancerous effects on us, all these chemicals, mostly they're hydrocarbons, they're derived from oil, etc. Do you think that, if I use the sunscreen, the reason why there's more skin cancer is because there's more sun cream use or sunscreen?
Well, it's a possibility that you can't rule out. I don't know the answer to that. I do know that from what I've seen of Big Pharma, that almost everything they do does not seem to be in our best interest. And yeah. I think there might be other ways. I've heard people talk about building tolerance to the sun and using your common sense. Maybe you go out for 5 minutes, 10 minutes and build it up that way. And also with sunglasses as well, you sort of build a tolerance. People have talked about these kind of things. It's not clear to me. I mean, I'm interested because I do think we've been lied to a lot about a lot of subjects. So I watch that with interest. But it's not clear to me. I think there's obviously a correlation there in the figures that you just cited. And what causes it, we don't know. But we have to also remember if we are, our skin is an organ, it's a very large organ, and it's absorbent. And so we're constantly almost absorbing things from that, whether it's in a shower, in the water, in the bath. And so if there are toxins in the sun creams, they will get in there. Now, I saw recently that the sun creams were fact-checked, a particular sun cream, and it was said that it doesn't cause cancer, and only a week or two later, it was shown that it did cause cancer. So there is a red flag in there that people need to be aware of and look for. But at the same time, you have to be careful you don't get burnt if you're pale and pasty like us North Europeans, right?
Yeah, you just build up tolerance, like you said. You know, I'm a pale. You know, we both look the same. We're very milk bottle white. You've got a bit of red there on your nose, Francis. I actually looked in the mirror just before I come on, just to make sure I look good because I'm on radio, and I actually had a very good, very nice tan coming on. I'm quite pleased with it, and I just get that in the morning. So we talked about. So these are some of the statements that I found. Sorry, he's waving. Go.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I remember speaking to a girl once who went to live in Spain and then she came back to live in London. And she felt much more pressure in this country. Just walking through the tube and all the advertising and all that kind of thing makes you feel like there's stuff wrong with you all the time. So it sort of ties in with what you're saying. If there's something wrong with you, you have to buy a product. But if you didn't have if Big Pharma didn't exist, how would you deal with the sun? How would you deal with the fact that, you know, you like would you buy mouthwash or all these things like, or hairspray or deodorants? And obviously you don't want to smell horrible and you want to look nice and people, and there's, that's always been part of human nature. But I think we are bombarded all the time with information that makes us feel like there's something wrong with us. And then we have to buy products, and that's how they get you hooked. And so if they can keep you in a state of unease or disease, like whether it's by vaccinations or creams or potions, then you're going to buy more products. And that's exactly what's happening. Everyone's going back for repeated boosters, aren't they? So because they think that's the solution, whereas actually it might not be the solution.
Or you know, the next SPF level of sun cream, you know, I mean, if I don't listen to the news, but I'm pretty certain the news and every other sort of voice that's pressurizing the public during this really hot spell that we're experiencing in the UK and anywhere else in the Western world, they're going to be saying, make sure you wear your sun cream, make sure you wear your sun cream. And you just know Pfizer or someone else is going, make sure you push the sun cream. And I had a look at the Wikipedia page, you know, because I'm a scientist and I use these, you know, reliable sources. And it says there are some concerns about potential vitamin D deficiency arising from prolonged use of sunscreens. And there's our vitamin D coming up again. The typical use of sunscreen does not usually result in vitamin D deficiency. However, extensive usage may. And it carries on and it keep, you keep going. And then it says, yeah, even moderate protection can substantially reduce vitamin D synthesis. So again, we're covering ourselves with this, these creams, these lotions, or we're vaccinating ourselves or whatever. And it seems like they're actually potentially going to have the opposite effect to what they're promising, which feeds in again to the profits of Big Pharma. I mean, if you get skin cancer, the NHS and the people who are funding them and the Big Pharma and all the rest of it are ultimately going to reap the benefits from it. Something else it said is a bit later or a bit before that vitamin D bit was, diligent use of sunscreen can also help to slow or temporarily prevent the development of wrinkles, dark spots, and sagging skins. And I kept reading through this Wikipedia article, and I could just keep seeing these bits that seem like they're adverts to say sunscreen's really, really good. I think that our entire environment that we've constructed and all the products that are forced upon us are there to harm us.
I mean, we were talking in terms of being white North Europeans, but also I have a friend who happens to be black. And I remember being out in the street with her filming her, and she was speaking to two other black people who were all masked up and hatted and hooded and all that. And she was telling them, like, you're a black person, you live in Northern Europe, you live in England, you need to get more sun, you need to get more vitamin D into you. Because it also, as we found out, or as we should have known at the beginning, helps against getting ill. You know, that's why we're supposed to go out and stock up on vitamin D and get in the sunshine, so to get us through the winter. And if you're a black person, you absorb less vitamin D than a white person. And so if you're wearing a mask and you're all covered up, it's not going to help. And she was explaining this, and YouTube pulled that video down. And the fact that they're censoring such basic and easily provable information, or easily like even just by intuition, you know, if you don't get sunlight, it's not going to be good for you, is very suspect. And if then they're asking you as well to put something on your skin that blocks vitamin D, you have to, again, look at the results and question what the motives are.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, it's the end results. It's the end results that the general public aren't aware of, because they don't necessarily have the foresight faculties or skills to sort of see that far ahead, that there is a plan or an agenda. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the fact that they're censoring what has always been well-established, commonly held sort of medical facts, you know, if you eat well, then you're going to be healthy. If you sleep well, you're going to be healthy. If you take your vitamins, or you're getting your vitamins from your food and your environment, the sunshine, then you're going to be healthy. And if that's being censored, you have to assume they don't want people healthy.
Right. And it's sunlight and fresh air. How can that not be part of your health regime? And also, people talk about, and somebody just mentioned nutrition there. There is a school of thought. And again, people have to look into it for themselves. And I'm not a doctor, but people are talking about how nutrition can help with protection against the sun. Because obviously, if you've got the nutrition you need to survive as a human being on the earth, then it may well help you absorb the sunlight in a different way. Obviously, there might be a limit to that, but it might increase your tolerance. So it's just, I mean, again, I don't know about that, and people have to check it, but it's possible.
I mean, I think if everyone who's listening to the show right now, I think the takeaway that you can go away with is, think about how you always used to live. Like, think about how your grandparents used to advise you on health issues.
you know, because, you know, my grandparents would have been, go out, get some fresh air, and here's your two veg and your meat and your potatoes. And if you don't eat it, you're not having the nice freshly baked cake that I made. Whereas now, you know, our lifestyles are so prepackaged and artificial, whether it's food or the products we consume or the medicines that we have or the behaviors that we've been encouraged to adopt, particularly in the last 2.5 years, they're all antithetical to good health. And I think, as we're seeing in terms of excess deaths, etc., something that we didn't have time to discuss today, we're seeing the results of that. And I think they're going to keep on pushing that type of anti-health narrative onto the public. And I think, you know, it all feeds into one thing: better climate and less people. Francis, it's been brilliant to have you on. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sure if I come back on to host again, you'll be one of the people that I'll contact, and we'll carry on our conversation. So enjoy the weekend, enjoy the sunshine, and I'll speak to you again soon.